How many really believe that the signs of the times report, point to the soon return of the Lord?
Yes.
Yeah.
Believe that? Yes. Now, there have always been those signs, but not in the way the Lord said they would be. And that's birth pains, where the intensity is there and the duration between is shorter. When you think about right now the word pestilence, just think about the cantaloupe and all these other things, something very innocent that you could be eating, have no indication of something very deadly. I see that as a pestilence issue. Yes?
Paul, another thing too is a lot of acreage has been taken out of production for production of corn for alcohol.
Yes.
Now, the worst thing is that alcohol can be synthesized in petroleum. And the public is kept ignorant of that. This is strictly a political thing. And also,
your microphone is there. If you can reach it.
Yeah, we want to hear this.
Yes, again, the alcohol that's made from grain could be synthesized from petroleum. Mm-hmm. So there is absolutely no reason except for the farm vote. And this is, I think, about 40% of the acreage now is used to produce corn. And here are people going hungry. There are 18,000 people who lost their jobs due to taking hundreds of thousands of acres out of cultivation in Southern California because the water was low and they were afraid that a certain little fish was going to go obsolete. So apparently they don't care much about people going obsolete, but let's protect those fish.
Oh, yes.
And another thing too is that we're seeing demonstrations around the United States getting worse.
Yeah.
And also, we use a lot of the petroleum products for fertilizer, and we're not going to see those, so the production can go low.
Right.
Another thing, too, is that we have hybrid. All the seeds are hybrid. And so, the following year, if you use the typical seed, you wouldn't get nearly the production.
Right.
So there are a lot of reasons why
family has fallen short. Well, we're working ourselves into a corner. You know, we're painting the floor and we're getting back in the corner with no door, except there. That's where the door is. Now, how many of you have read Ezekiel 38:39? How many have heard presentations on it? All right. How many are aware there's controversy over it? Okay. Are you aware of the two major schools? Now, we're speaking biblically now, not the people out there in the world. Well, David Hawking has done a reversal. He's been on both sides. And I have some of his presentations, and I heard this one, and I thought, wow, he really expressed it very well. Then later in the album, it's reversed. So I called the ministry and said, now which is it? Where is he? And you better take one of them out. And he said, oh no, he's gone from the pre-tribulation to the Armageddon. I said, no, he's gone the wrong way. So anyway, Dave Reagan has never changed, but that's the approach that I'm going to be using. That this refers to a war prior to the tribulation, is not the Battle of Armageddon. But as we study it, you will see why some people think it is. Because there are some similar passages, but yet some major differences. In the Bible, there has to be exact match. Similarities do not imply it's the same time period. You follow that? It must be exact and it must be put into context to the whole thing. Or you're going to have problems with it. Yeah. Let me, okay. In your handout, and I don't know if you've looked ahead or not, but on page 2, I have put all the Gog and Magog verses in the Bible there for you on that one page, so we don't have to go hunting through them. And if you notice quickly at the references, most of them are in what book? Ezekiel. And what chapters?
38-39.
But notice there are some in 1 Chronicles and in Revelation. So let's sort that out, because there's another complication, because there are two references to Gog and Magog in two different time periods. I'm not talking about pre-trib versus Armageddon. I'm talking about post-millennial and Ezekiel 38-39. So let's take that one first. And if you looked at this in Revelation chapter 20, verse 8, it refers to Gog and Magog. Now, if you know Revelation, chapter 20 is referred to as the what? What is it all about? It's all about the millennium. It's in the chapter on the millennium. So should there be any doubt of where it fits in? All right, read that. Somebody read.
Read verse 8.
Grab a mic. Can you use the mic? Cause it's, that one over there is longer. Yeah.
When 1,000 years are over, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them for battle. In number, they are like the sand on the seashore.
Okay, now what's the time period there? Because who's being released?
Satan.
And where is he released from? Hell?
No.
No, prison. He hasn't been cast into hell yet, because once you're in hell, it's permanent.
Right?
He has. Where was Satan judged?
At the cross.
At the cross. And what's the reference in Genesis 3:15? He will do this and I will do that. One's going to crush, or one's going to strike the heel and the other's crushing the head. Who got their heel bruised?
Jesus.
Who got their head smashed? The serpent, Satan. The way to kill a snake is you got to crush the head. If for a quick one. Now, would that mean Satan was dead? That he could, right. A lot of people say, oh, then Satan, we don't have to deal with him anymore. No, that's not what it means. It means the power of sin has been broken for those who accept Jesus Christ. That's the key right there. So when you became a born-again believer, if you truly are, there's no power of sin in your life. Can you sin?
Yes.
But you have to choose to sin. It's not automatic. And if you've ever had some kind of a sin habit before you were saved, and you notice the difference after you're saved. You follow me there on some things? Absolutely. So, Satan then is still the prince of the air. We live in that time period, right? Then we know that his sentence has already been proclaimed at the cross, his sentence. He knows it, and he's trying to do everything he can to stop the Lord from fulfilling that. And if nothing else, at least take as many with him. Right? That's his goal. So at the end of the tribulation, what happens to Satan? He is what for 1,000 years?
Bound.
He's bound for 1,000 years. Now, in the millennium, can sin manifest from the non-believers?
Yes.
Right. Because there will be people coming into the millennium who will all be believers. Plus, we're not talking about the redeemed now, saints, the glorified body, the church. And the martyrs of the tribulation and the remnant of the Jews. Okay, we're all in Jerusalem. But the people that come through the millennium that are not in those groups are still in the flesh. If they don't have the glorified body, they're in the flesh in the millennium, and they will be married, have children, and so on. Those children will need salvation. And many of them will not come because Jesus is ruling with a rod of iron, which means that there is still the sinful nature, or he wouldn't have to be ruling with a rod of iron. So what happens at the end of the millennium when Satan is let loose by God, he immediately gathers all of those who have not been saved from the world and tries to go against Jerusalem, go against the Lord. That's what that's talking about, isn't it? Okay, and the Lord says, drop dead, and you know he's cast into hell, and the rest of them are then alive, or the ones resurrected that in torments that have never been saved are judged. That's the white throne judgment at the end of the millennium. Okay? Now, you can say that that verse does not fit. That Gog and Magog is not there. That's war number 9. Can you see that? That's war 9. Okay. Now, let's go to the verses in Ezekiel. And notice right off, somebody read Ezekiel 38:2. The Son of Man, set your face against. And what does it say? Gog, okay, of the land of Magog. So which is which? Who is a person? Is Gog a person or is Magog a person?
Gog is a person.
How many say Gog? How many say Magog? Okay, well this is another big problem. We need to solve it right away. Go down to the bottom where it talks about Magog, and you'll see in Genesis 10:2, what does it say? The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog. Magog is a guy.
He's a grandson of Noah, it says.
All right. Now, go back up to that verse we just read in Ezekiel, and it says, well, wait a minute, from the land of Magog. So what? That's very confusing. Well, let's add some more problems to it. Let's look up 1 Chronicles 5:4. And it says the descendants of Joel, and it gets down there and says Gog. Gog's a person. Over down here it says Magog's the person. Problem, problem, right? Well, let's look up 1 Chronicles 5:4. And you'll see what the problem is. And the solution to the problem. Because there isn't a problem. Is this the Joel, the book of Joel? Talking about descendants of Joel. Is that the same Joel? No, it's not. There are many names, a name that's used many times in the Bible. I'll give you an example. The father, earthly speaking, of Jesus named
Joseph.
Joseph's father named Joseph. Hey, you guys got to get in the family. You're not even in the family of God. Who's Joseph's father? Jacob. Okay, now we have a Joseph that was the 11th son of Jacob. A different Jacob. Totally different. Well, it's the same here. It's not the same Joel. But what does it say? This is in the lineage of who?
Reuben.
Was Reuben the Japhethite? Now you got to get your genealogy straight. From Noah, he had how many sons?
Three.
Japheth, Ham, and Shem. Now today we're going to be talking about which group?
Can't remember.
Who are God's people? Which of these three?
Shemites.
Okay, not all Semites, because Arabs are Semites.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. And there's mixture. And we're also going to be talking about the enemies that are going to be listed here. Gog and Persia and Putin Kush and so on. Those are all from what group?
Yeah.
Go to the next page and you'll see Japheth, Ham and Shem. They're from who?
Ham,
right. So basically, you have the Hamites going after the nation of Israel, Ezekiel 38, 39. So when it's talking in 1 Chronicles 5, 4 about Gog, does that Gog have anything to do with the Gog of Ezekiel 38, 39? It's a total different time period, and it's a whole different lineage. They're not even related unless you go back to Noah. They're not related. See, that's what I'm saying. When you study the Bible, you better get the context and the time frame, or people just go at it and make all kinds of statements and draw false conclusions. Right? So that, you can cross that up. We're not going to deal with that verse. And when it comes down to the another one, down below here, let's see. No, where is it? Yeah. Down below, under Magog, 1 Chronicles 1:5. Okay, it says the sons of Japheth. Now it says Gomer and Magog. Isn't that the same as it says in Genesis? So those two verses are parallel. Genesis 10:2 and 1 Chronicles 1:5 are parallel verses. Remember, Chronicles brings forward the history of Israel. It's going to take things out of Genesis and the kings. So when you read 1 and 2 Kings, you got a chronology there. But when you read 1 and 2 Chronicles, it's not a continuation of 2 Kings. You follow me? Because it's dealing with all that information from a different perspective. And it can be very, very confusing. So, 1 Chronicles 1, what is it, 1:15 or 1:5? 1:5, okay, is parallel and does relate. It relates to Genesis 10:2. So there we know that Magog is a person. We got to start there first. Now we got to go back to two periods of history here to understand this. Now if you don't get this, then the whole thing is going to get messed up. Let's see if I can explain it right. Last night, yesterday afternoon trying to sort this out in my own mind and see how I can explain it. I understand it, but how do you explain it? Okay. If you go back to the time of Joshua, when they came into the land of Israel, areas were assigned to different tribes. Is that correct? Okay, so areas were known as by the name of the tribe, and the name of the tribe was a person. Alright, let's just take Judah, the fourth son, Leah's fourth. Alright. The area we know around Jerusalem is called Judean land or Judah, and it's named after him. But generations later, when they're talking about Judah as a land area, they're not talking about the boy. You follow me? We have the same situation here. The same situation. So back at the time when we had the guy named Magog, he ended up as a descendant off of the one son of Noah, Japheth. Now we know that that group moved from where they were in Shinar. Remember when the confusing the languages there, they moved north. Now, this is an area of the world that most of us probably don't know much of the geography. Right? So if you think of the Mediterranean Sea, what country sits kind of at the end there today?
Turkey.
If you start working your way over here, you get to where the seven churches were, and then you get the Adrian see here, and then you can go up over here, and you come into Greece, then there's another body of water, and then you get to Italy. All right, get up into Europe. Well, now you have Eastern Europe coming in here. You got the Black Sea up here, right? And these come together. And then you got these areas here, which are like this. Now, what are those called? Because you keep going up layer by layer by layer, and then you get to Russia. Those are called the
steps.
Because they're plateaued down, big areas down. They're just called the steps, as known geographically. So they settled that area. Today we have the Ukraine, we have all this, Tajikistan, in Georgia, and all those were satellites of Russia forming the Soviet Union. And then you had Eastern Europe. We know those countries pretty well, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, Poland, and so on, right? Okay. So it's the up in this region. Now, when it comes to the time of Ezekiel's prophecy, he is flashing forward. But this area still is known as the Magog area. Now, they don't call it that today. But some of the words we're going to read in there, those cities are still there, but they were named after guys. Like Tubal was a guy. It's still there as the capital of Siberia. Some of them have similar names, but some have changed. So we know we're talking about this land up here in the farthest north. Now, where does Gog fit in? Well, Gog is not a person. It's a title. Just like Caesar, Tsar, President, Emperor, because it's called the Prince. Prince. So this is really a ruler. We don't know the name of who is being represented by Gog. You follow me there? All right. So if we can get that to understand. But as we understand this now in Ezekiel, we need to think of this as a person, but this is his title. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. Now that's why it's going to appear that the Bible has contradictions throughout when we look at these. So now when you see up the top, we're under Gog here. We get to Ezekiel 38:2, and it says, against Gog, okay, that's against the Tsar, the ruler, whoever's the head of all this, from the land of Magog, because that was a guy once, but now we're talking about the land that Magog settled. Does that make sense? That's the best I can do with it.
Yeah, that makes
okay,
sense.
Okay. So as we are going to look at Ezekiel 38, we're going to think of which of these as a person that's going to be living in this time period. Magog or Gog? Gog, because he is the prince, the ruler, which I believe is really the president of Russia.
Which one?
Well, I don't know if it's this one or the next one, but right now as we look at it, we have to think in those terms. Okay. Now, does that help?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the other thing is where people say, well, wait a minute, it's got to be the Armageddon battle, because what follows 39 is 40. And what's 40 to 48 all about? One thing. It's the
New temple.
And it's it's the millennial temple,
yes,
in great detail. Well, wait a minute. Well, then why doesn't chapter 39 be the end of the tribulation and it goes right into the millennium? Well, wait a minute. We know, that's a terrible argument. We know that the Bible is like mountain ranges and there are things in between. Now I'm going to show you one. Go back to Ezekiel 37. We know that is the Valley of the
Dry
Bones. And there's some discrepancy about this. When do you think that prophecy was fulfilled, or has it not been fulfilled? the Valley of the Dry Bones.
48?
People say 1948. That's not true. That's one of the things I don't believe is true. Now, there was a significant part of that prophecy in 1948. Okay, that's true. But if you study it thoroughly, when did God start bringing the people back? When it says that he opened the graves of the nations, remember the Jews are all over the world. The dry bones he's talking about in that valley before him came alive, representing the nation of Israel. But were those the only people in the nation of Israel?
No.
There are people from the nation of Israel that are buried all over the world. And so he's talking about the resettlement of Israel. The reestablishment is of bringing them back. Now in God's mind, Israel never ceased to exist. It never ceased to exist. And let's go over that. And then we can move into the 38-39. This will explain to you about the whole thing with the so-called Palestinians. You know, people don't like the truth. Did you hear the Prime Minister of Israel's speech at the United Nations?
Yes.
Was that tremendous? I have it here if anybody wants to borrow it and read it. Yeah, it's on David Hawking's website. Wonderful message, a very loving message, but he pointed straight out all the things that have happened in history where they have honored things and the others have dishonored it. He put the Palestinians right where they belong. Very, very excellent. We see now that Israel is becoming solidified. This has been the big problem. They've had divisions within Israel. That's another sign. They're coming together as a people now, and more people coming to the Lord. Of course, that will unify them completely. All right, so this area, and so by the way, if you take the original land that God gave to Abraham in that covenant, and you put the New Jerusalem in it, guess what happened?
Does it cover?
Is exactly the same size.
Yeah.
1,500 square miles.
Yeah.
Yep, a square. Hawking did this. He said, I took a map of Israel and to scale, I drew out the 1,500 and I set it on her. He said, I just went wild. And my wife wasn't even home to share it with her.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Wow. Okay, so what we have is the nation of Israel, which to God has always been the nation of Israel. Actually, nation is not right. He always called it the land of Israel. When Jesus and Mary and Joseph came back from Egypt, it says in Matthew that they came to the land of Israel, not Palestine. When you read in a Bible, a map, it says Palestine in the time of Jesus. It was not Palestine in the time of Jesus. It was the land of Israel. The church has helped the enemy so much, the so-called church. And by the way, if you believe the Bible, you're a minority. Most churches today are on the Palestinian side to get rid of the Jews. You know that? Yeah. You might as well go home and shoot your mother or your grandmother. Well, that's what you're doing, right? You're shooting your own heritage. All right. So, there were people here at the time Abraham came in, and of course then the time of Joseph, they went into Egypt, they came back and wandered around and came back in and possessed the land, officially possessed the land at the time of Joshua. Now, when God disciplined them after Solomon's death, and by the way, why did God not discipline him during Solomon's time? Because of Solomon's sin.
Because he's tribute to David.
Right. He told Solomon, because of your father David and his relationship with me, God speaking, I'm going to hold it off. So it was God that divided the kingdom. All right, we had the Assyrians taking the northern in 722 BC. That began the dispersion. But not all the Jews were taken away from here. Some remained. So some went up here to what is now Syria. And then later, when the Babylonians took over the Assyrians, they came down and, you know, took the southern kingdom to Babylon. But not everybody. And then when the Medo-Persian got involved, then some were taken over there. But so they're being spread out, but my point is, some always remained. There's never been a time where there hasn't been Jews in the land of Israel after they were established.
God has always had a remnant.
Yes, always. And we know that Cyrus allowed them to come back and rebuild the temple, so more came back. Now, we move up to modern day times, because at the time of World War I, who controlled this part of the Middle East?
Britain.
Turkey, called the Ottoman Empire. The Turks allied with the Germans in World War I, so when they were defeated, they lost control of this area, and the British and the French predominantly came in and started carving up the Middle East. Back in about 200 BC, the Caesar was so angry at the people revolting here. That's when Masada came in, that time. Alright, and that's when we had the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. But still, there were Jews there, and they had a revolt, and then they came in and finished them off. Alright, that's when they committed suicide. Alright. That's when they named this area Palestine, after the Philistines. It's the Roman way of saying Philistines, because they were their enemies, so to insult them, they called their land Palestine. Now, in this area were people that were not Jews. There's always been a mixture. The Bedouin people are the people that lived in tents and moved here and there, like Abraham did, many of those people did, but they were Semites, where these other people were not. They were a mixture of people. But the people that were the Bedouins tended to be more what we call Arabs today. They were the descendants of Ishmael, so they are related into Abraham. The other people that we call Arabs really aren't, like the Iranians or the Saudi Arabians, whatever. But again, there's been so much intermarriage that it's very hard to delineate those groups anymore. But my point is that there were people living among each other in the area called Palestine. So when World War I ended, the Balfour Accord, England had born-again believers in the government. The Prime Minister and the Cabinet and many people were Bible-based people, and they said, you know what? Israel is supposed to have a... Jews are supposed to have a land. This is Israel. They need a land. They're going to have a land. We're going to give it to them. So when the Turks were defeated, the Balfour Accord was established, giving this land, which was pretty much the land that had originally been given. And then later on, Churchill and others went down here and said, well, we'll work an oil deal with you guys, and then we'll give you this part, the east bank of the Jordan, which became Jordan. That originally had been given to Israel even by international law, and was taken away. Okay, but the point is, when that happened, nothing happened here. The Jews up here in Europe, many were very prosperous. Why would they want to come back to a land where all the trees had been cut down and where there was water, with swamps and mosquito-infested malaria and everything? Why would they want to come back there? Would you? I mean, I was going to say it's like for us to go out and live in Yuma, but that's not nice to say. go to the Sierra. So we can understand that. And they had no ties there. Some were very secular Jews. They weren't Orthodox Jews. Well, but God wanted them back there. So God creates a situation. He allows this whole thing of World War II to come along, which forced the Jews out. But actually, the Balfour Accord is the beginning of the fulfillment of Ezekiel 37. Can you see that? Because some did come. But it's been very slow. But after World War II, when all these people wanted to get out, then the British wouldn't let them back. You aware of that? Remember the ship, the Exodus?
Yeah.
And all that? Okay. Where they actually fired on ships that were not in good shape anyway, and they sunk them in the Mediterranean. There are videos on this, but they tried to hide that. Well, and then they machine gunned, that they got to shore, they machine gunned these people down. These are refugees from the Holocaust. Well, you can see the shape England's in today. God, you know, God's not going to stand by and allow this to happen without consequences. Well, my point is, eventually, 1948 came and was established as the State of Israel, thanks to our President Truman, was a big person involved in this. And others in the government were totally against it. And when he got the document on his desk, they had not even put the name in. He said, well, what is it called? And they said, well, I guess it's going to be Israel. He said, okay, well, give me a pen. He wrote in, State of Israel. So that's when it really started then. Well, as that happened, the Arabs out here, or we call them the Muslims, said to the non-Jews here in Palestine, come out. You come out, we're going to destroy them, and then you can go back in and take the land. That was their plan. It's still the plan today. But the people aren't in there. The people are in refugee camps. They're over here in Gaza, and they're over here in the West Bank. Those are refugee camps. Now, why did that happen? Israel said, come back and live among us. A few did. There are Muslims in the Jewish parliament. Yes. So, these people are not Palestinians. If they're Palestinians, so are the Jews. You get it? Right. The deal was worked out then because of these people left here that didn't want to go back. They said, the Western world said, okay, Egypt, Jordan, and Syria, you will assimilate these people. Whichever country they want to go to, you must take them. And they all agreed. Only one of those three countries kept its deal. Which one? Egypt. Egypt took some of them. They gave them passports, citizenship. These others have no country. So who is the problem? The problem is not the Jews. The problem are with their brothers. They could easily take those people into Saudi Arabia or whatever else. But they don't want to because they use them as a buffer to get at Israel, and they've got the whole world now looking on these poor people that they themselves have abused. They've abused. I have testimony from a man who actually came to my house the other day, I hadn't seen for a while, but he used to live in Gaza, and they still have family there. And they said when the Jews had control here, we had peace and prosperity. He said, the Jews are smart. I said, that's because they're God's people. And you can be one of God's people too.
Thanks for that.
Yes.
The Jews are smart. Because I live amongst... I said, oh, no, for that. Because I live amongst a bunch of... In fact, my grandfather... delivered milk in the area of Cincinnati, which was all the rich Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to deliver milk up there.
Mm-hmm.
So they are smart.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good business people.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So what we have then, we have to keep in mind, is that the situation today was created by the Muslims, by the non-Jewish people. And so as we looked at the war last week, we saw that these people, maybe not all the people, but their governments, the control, are eliminated, and Israel has control of that. Now keep in mind, it's going to give Israel easier defensible borders, right? When they can move way out into here. So it appears that they're unwalled. That's another argument we'll read, because it has to be when they feel at peace and in unwalled cities. And people say, well, no, before the tribulation, no, that's not true. It's only when the Antichrist makes a treaty with them will they have peace in unwalled cities. So that, I think that's stretching it. Okay, do we have enough background now that we can move in? So we're talking about something that's going to be after this inner circle has been eliminated. Now the people could be still there. There are people in Jordan and Syria that would love Israel to be in control. There are Christians there. There are people who know the truth of Israel. So once those the negative is removed, I don't think these people are going to be rebelling, because I don't think Israel is going to do much about it except put up their defenses. They're going to help them to be prosperous. If they're sick, they're going to help them. It's the Jewish people that have gone in and taken wounded Palestinians and brought them to their hospitals. Yes. Absolutely. The whole thing is turned around. If they say negative things about the Jews in Israel, you know it's true about the enemy, pretty much. Now, another thing about 38 and 39. They're not sequential. What's new, right? Okay. 38 is sequential and 39 is sequential, but you have to weave them in and out. You follow me? So when we get to 39, it's going to go back up to the beginning here, but tell us something different. So don't get confused. Don't try to put it sequentially here. All these relate in the same time period. Does that make sense? Okay. So let's start, I think, the first four verses. And I want to take this slowly so we get the foundation right here. So somebody want to begin reading in 38. And in our outline, now we're going to be looking, if we get back to page 4, we're going to be on look at, we're going to try to find the names that they were called in the Bible. And then we'll try to find the modern day countries.
How many verses in?
I think it's about 4.
4 verses?
Mm-hmm.
Now the word of the Lord came to me saying, Son of man, set your face against God. Of the land of Nadab, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, and prophesy against him and say, Thus says the Lord God, Behold, I am against you, O God, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. I will turn you around from hooks into your jaws and lead you out with all your army, horses, and horsemen, all splendidly clothed, a great company with bucklers and shields. All of them handling swords.
Okay. Now you can write down, right from the Bible, the names that he's the prince of what regions?
Meshach.
Tubal. Just mentioned. And Rosh. Now don't try to do a phonetic thing here and say Rosh is Russia, because that won't. And that people do that, and that's not being fair to the Bible at all. See, some of the regions' names change, and sometimes they do not change. So now what we see is a group that are in a confederation. Right? That's what we know so far. Now, what does it say that God is going to do? He's going to put what in their mouth? A hook. Now think about fishing. You always put something over a hook, right? A bait. So they're being baited, and you'll find out what the baiting is later on. But God's going to make sure, so He's going to put the hook right in their mouth. He's not even going to disguise it, because the bait is in Israel. Now, you could put a hook on your foot or on your leg, and they could pull and pull, and you could still resist pretty well. Pretty hard to resist when it's in your mouth, right? Yeah. So God is behind this. And by the way, where is Ezekiel when God is giving him this? He's in Persia. He's in captivity, along with Daniel. He's about 10 years older than Daniel, so at this point he's probably getting up and well into being a senior. Now, what does it tell about this army that's coming? They're going to be having two kinds of shields, and they're going to be riding horses. Now, some people take this literally because the whole Russian area today actually has 80 to 90% of the horses in the world are located right there. All right? The Cossacks. Now, the Cossacks were in the steppe areas. If you remember the movie, The Dr. Zhivago,
yes.
Do you remember when those guys with those hats were on the horses and they came down the streets? They were the Cossacks. They were the military. And they had horses. The Russians used horses in World War I, and they used horses in World War II.
Germans had a lot of cavalry in
yes.
World War II.
Yes. We always think of, in our country, is that going out during the Civil War time, right? Now, if you look at the topography of this region, to come down on the east side of the Black Sea, to come down from this area, you find it's very mountainous. And obviously, they're going to travel in the valleys, right? Well, there are valley passes that they could actually bring all of that down into the Middle East. Now, I don't think that modern day Russia is going to send their entire military on horseback. I've heard of somebody preach that. I thought, you gotta be crazy. With satellites today, they'd be spotted and, you know, they could be done away. Israel would deal away with them very quickly. Right? Yeah. So, they may be involved, I don't know. But the point is, that was their main force way back. And Ezekiel, you got to remember, is going to be like Daniel or John in Revelation. He's seen things that would fit into his time frame, and then trying to describe them as the Lord gave it. And so people at that day could understand. And we now have to look back to their time and then project forward. So I don't really care what kind, if they use the submarine bringing people in or whatever, right? It just means that they're going to get there. And they have two kinds of shields, the large shield and the small shield. The large one was used in a different way of battle. The small ones were used in more hand-to-hand combat. Remember the Romans said those long ones, they would make like a tank, a whole border and put them over the top and more defensive kind of thing. It means that they could handle anything. That's the way I interpret it. They're prepared to deal with this situation at a distance and hand to hand. In other words, they are going to be successful in their minds, right? Okay. Now let's go on to the next verses. Do you have something to say?
Go ahead. I'm just going to say, World War II, the cavalry was tanks and half-tracks. I was attached to as an engineer.
Yes. And you'll also see as we go on that this Gog has allies that already has equipment down here. Okay. Next verse.
You know, when our soldiers went in to Afghanistan, they had to ride horses.
Sure. Yeah.
When they were going through the mountains.
Yeah, I believe there will be. Right, but not only horses.
No, not only.
It's just another validation that we're talking about Russia. Okay, the next verses. Wait, is it break time?
How many verses did you want?
It's break time, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, let's just stop right there.